Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations, and you're live with the best mind in Black America, me, Shawna Williams, and this is The Cutting Edge Show. This evening, I will be discussing current events. I don't know how many of you that has heard of Elijah McClain, a Black man who was put in a chokehold and injected with a powerful sedative 2 years ago in suburban Denver. He was 23 years old. Captured on police body camera video, McClain was pleading, "I'm just different." Race soldiers, a.k.a. police officers, confronted McClain as he walked down the street in the city of Aurora, Colorado, after a 911 caller reported he looked suspicious. McClain was a massage therapist who volunteered to play his violin to comfort cats at an animal shelter. Today, a grand jury in Colorado just indicted three police officers and two paramedics in the brutal murder of Elijah McClain. They were charged with 32 counts. McClain was unarmed, nonviolent, and had never broke law. The indictment is against Aurora police officers, a.k.a. race soldiers, Randy Rodema and Nathan Woodyard, former Aurora police officer Jason Rosenblatt, Aurora fire rescue paramedics Jeremy Cooper and Peter Six Hunick for their conduct on the night of August 24, 2019 that resulted in the death of McClain. On Tuesday, Heron Police Department in Heron, Illinois, released body and dash camera footage following backlash over how officers treated Kevion Crawford, a Black man who says they were racially profiled and mistreated. And mistreated during a traffic stop. Police tased Crawford repeatedly and put his fiance in handcuffs while his four-month-old baby was crying in the car. According to video, Crawford is now being charged with traffic violation and the arresting officer on record is David Lux. A statement released by the department on social media said the reason for the initial stop was there was no taillights illuminated on Crawford's vehicle. Crawford said on a news channel, nothing was wrong with his lights. Also, on Marion Uncut, Joseph Joey Swift, a Marion man, this is Marion, Illinois, was found dead Sunday in a pond nearby the Full House Gaming Parlor and Bar on Old Route 13 on a local judge's property. Swift's body was found on Sunday, and his wallet and his money he won from a lottery at Huck's prior to going to the bar was missing. The owner of the bar says Swift never came there and will only give police security footage if they have a warrant. The Williamson County Sheriff's Department or Sheriff's Office is investigating. The judge refused to sign a warrant to look at the surveillance video. Very suspicious. As you know, Hurricane Ida has been devastating to Louisiana and the Gulf Coast. It made landfall in Louisiana on Sunday, the 16th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, as a Category 4 storm with winds reaching 150 miles per hour and gusts up to 172 miles per hour. The storm flooded homes, tore off roofs, and left New Orleans in the dark. Now, if you were living in Louisiana or the Gulf Coast, would you put your trust into levees, seawalls, or flood control mechanisms? The Gulf Coast is one of the country's fastest growing regions, which includes Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. Between 2000 and 2016, the population in that region grew by 25.4% compared to 14.8% across the U.S. This has fueled a construction boom of homes, infrastructure, business, and industrial facilities, particularly the gas and oil sectors. People of color mostly populate lower income communities, have less protective infrastructure, like the levees and seawalls, leaving them vulnerable to storms and rising waters. People in these communities also have the most difficulty getting out of the path of a storm. So, also because they struggle to find money and shelter to evacuate. So how has Black history influenced disaster planning? So also, I was reading on a disasterphilanthropy.org. They were talking about today, decades after the end of legal limits on their mobility, too many African Americans and other highly vulnerable populations are place-bound, concentrated in disaster-prone areas without the resource to move out of harm's way. Those who study disasters in the U.S. have known for decades that some suffer disproportionately due to the impacts of disasters. Disasters don't discriminate, of course, but the vestiges of historic discrimination in the U.S. have consigned many African Americans, in particular, to living in high-risk floodplains and or substandard housing, less able to withstand the extreme forces of a tornado or hurricane. Further atrocities African Americans encounter while trying to survive and recover from disasters have been well documented over the course of recorded U.S. disaster history. From the San Francisco earthquake of 1906 to the Great Mississippi Flood of 1927 and Hurricane Floyd's 1999 and Katrina 2005. Today, decades after the end of legal limits on their mobility, too many African Americans and other highly vulnerable populations are place-bound, concentrated in disaster-prone areas without any help at all.
Where's Brooklyn? Oh, hey, Jane.
So, do you think that these Black people, bring my thing right back. So, do you think that these people should be living in these disaster-prone areas? And shouldn't Black people have an emergency fund set aside for disasters? I mean, because when you live in Louisiana or in those coastal Gulf areas, they are prone to hurricanes and things like that. So what are your thoughts on that? So do Black people prepare for disasters? Because we know that the Center for Disaster Philanthropy, like it says, how Black history has influenced disaster planning. and they all know there are vulnerable hotspots in the U.S. and not just sections of community with concentrations of people of color. Instead, hotspots are the intersections of population exposed to hazards and with physical and or social limitations that exacerbate the impact of disaster. Further mapping these community indicators can reveal patterns and levels of vulnerability that may not be recognized otherwise. Most hazards are predictable, and many can be depicted geographically. Some common hazards to map include floodplains, wind risk, fire risk, surge zones, hazardous material sites, and sea level rise. And there are a number of resources available to obtain this data, like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and the Environmental Protection Agency. Mapping physical vulnerability. Once you have mapped hazard exposures, you can identify the elements in the built environment that are critical during or in the aftermath of a disaster. Maps should indicate roads designated as evacuation routes, as well as the location of schools, fire stations, police stations, and hospitals, for starters. When mapping social vulnerability, this step calls for mapping areas in the community where people may have a more difficult time preparing for, responding to, or recovering from a disaster or social vulnerability. It's also indicated in areas in your community where with higher levels of single-parent households and households with dependents, for example, as these populations will likely have childcare needs during and after an event. Also consider mapping groups with disabilities or without vehicles. These groups are less likely to comply with evacuation orders without help. Once socially vulnerable populations are mapped, you can overlay or combine maps of these three community indicators to see where they intersect. These intersections or hotspots of vulnerability can help planners make strategic choices about the allocation of resources before, during, and after disasters that ensure optimum efficiency and effectiveness. The experiences of African Americans in the midst of the worst disasters in history have taught us that exposure to and the impacts of disasters are not equally distributed. Today and going forward, the lessons inform the work of disaster planners who care about the equity in disaster preparedness, response, and recovery. And you can find some of this information on a Center for Disaster Philanthropy. Also, when a big disaster strikes, people of color are usually hit the hardest. And we also need a survival guide that can help us and help most black people. Because it turns out that natural disasters don't just reveal inequality, they actually make it worse. Earthquakes, fires, floods, hurricanes all widen the gap. And that's according to a sociologist, Junior Howe, who has studied the aftermath of disasters. Her conclusions are startling. If you're white, over time, you're actually going to accumulate more than if you never had that disaster in the first place. But for black people, for Latinos, for Asians, it's not true, said Howe, who is an assistant professor at University of Pittsburgh and urban research scholar with Rice University. She and colleagues studied 13 years of data to examine how well people did or not recover after a natural disaster. The study found that white Americans who experience disaster accumulate significantly more wealth than any other group. compared to white counterparts don't experience that natural disaster. Hal was interviewed for an episode of a podcast, The Big One, that focuses on what would happen to LA's economy after an earthquake. When disaster strikes, more money for whites, less for blacks. Bottom line, Hal's study found that white Americans who experienced natural disaster had the highest predicted wealth accumulation of any racial or ethnic group. Blacks, on the other hand, had an overall loss of wealth when they experienced disaster. Predicted wealth accumulation for whites and blacks attributed to natural disasters. And that was in 2015. To predict wealth, the researchers took into account the race, education, and home ownership status of residents who lived in U.S. counties that experienced disasters. The whiter and more educated you are, the more likely you recover and do even better in the long run. When we think about what those findings mean for LA, keep in mind, most people who live in LA, about 73%, are people of color according to a recent census estimate. They rent. They don't have renter's insurance. They don't have much money saved. Less than half of the people in LA County have a bachelor's degree. The things that give you a leg up in recovery, advanced education, assets like a home, the safety net of money in the bank. Most people in Los Angeles don't have that. The cost of disaster inequity. So just how much does this kind of disparity cost in the long run? In the most extreme cases, the researchers analyze similarly educated white and black homeowners. The difference was roughly $100,000. Winners and losers, for every $100 in white family wealth, black families hold just $5.04, according to the New York Times, the Federal Reserve report, that blacks and Latinos trail whites in home ownership, car ownership, savings, and income. And when it comes to recovering from disasters, having wealth in the first place holds the key to putting your life back together. It works like this. If you own a home and you have insured it, you will probably get the chance to rebuild after it's damaged or destroyed. That means you potentially come out of the disaster with an updated house that's worth more than before the disaster. Hal, whose focus of study is wealth inequality, called home insurance an amazing safety net for those who can afford it. At the same time, she said it's one of the biggest kind of known elements of these inequalities unfold. Even if you have renter's insurance, and many people do not, you will not see the same benefits. You might recover some of your damages, but you won't be able to build wealth like a homeowner with that rebuilt house has. Aside from personal insurance, Hal said national and local officials make decisions that affect property value that fall along racial and socioeconomic class lines. White middle-class communities are being favored for the paving new roads, making sure that electricity is back on, making sure homes are back up and running for residents, Hal said. She added such decisions, even if they aren't intentionally racist, are tied to deeper issues of inequity when it comes to where stores, hospitals, and other essential resources are located in communities. In Houston, for example, houses in disadvantaged neighborhoods had blue tarps for roofs for years after 2008 hurricane. Ike, even though there was a big pot of money set aside to help low-income people, only 60 out of 2,400 applicants for home repair received federal funding by 2011. Most of the houses without approved applications were in low-income neighborhoods, according to Hal. Damages caused by the big one may be indiscriminate, but the process of recovery, especially depending on who you are, will not be. So, what do you think about the inequity and inequality with this? If you have a question or comment, call 516-531-9540. And also, if you have ever been in a hurricane or a natural disaster, I'd like to hear from you. Okay, 5240. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes. Hello, you can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, that's good. I work in natural disasters, and, a lot of times what you see is true, but there's a lot of African-Americans that do, the ones that are educated, they do stay, they got their own houses, they got their own money, they're doing well off. There's a lot of poverty, but, there's black neighborhoods that financially doing a lot better off. They need less help. They insure, but I just think for African Americans, we just have to do better. Even if we ain't there yet, we just have to save more money, and because it's when you got the lights out, you no AC, they ain't got no money to get a hotel, so they got to wait till electricity people come on. It's everybody outside all day. They revved up, they hot, they mad, they ain't got no money, they frustrated. But, you go in certain neighborhoods where the African-Americans that do get that, you see less people out because they got the means to either buy a hotel or they go to other family relatives' house. They got generators, they got, other stuff that goes on. But, my thing is, just be prepared and just do what you could so you won't be in that predicament. But a disaster can happen to everybody, even in rich neighborhoods like Retina, even New Orleans, bad things can happen. But at least they got money in the savings account. They got, stuff where they can go buy. They can travel. They can leave the city and go for a couple weeks somewhere else where they well off than, the African-Americans. African-Americans mostly got to stay and as they say, shelter in place and try to wait it out and see what's best because they ain't got no savings. They ain't got a lot of money, so they just got to try to wait out, wait the storm out. But, the ones that can do better just need to do better.
Okay, I'm glad I have you on the phone since you have been in hurricanes and these disasters. What is the worst thing you have ever seen during a hurricane?
The worst thing I can see is trees down, rain, no electricity, people using the restroom in a little 5-gallon bucket and stuff like that with toilet tissue around the back, the back of the house and stuff like that. They're just basically trying to survive. When you're in survival mode, you do a lot of stuff that you wouldn't ordinarily do. So, flooding, car stopping. I've worked in disasters, with the city over the years. I'm not saying I had it like Katrina or like Ida's now, but I've seen some bad spots where it's really frustrating, especially if you ain't got no money. Anytime you ain't got no money, no savings, it's really frustrating because you got to get some church come, give you some food or whatever the kids, they frustrated, especially if you got little kids because they aggravated, they frustrated, you know what I'm saying? The water not running, so you see a lot of unsanitary things, to Red Cross and the rest of them get to you where they can start, let you get a little freedom here and there. But, it's a, It's rough. So just thank God I never had to be in it too long and just witnessing it and work it. But it's just frustrating. Even for the workers, it's frustrating because you're working 12, 13 hours a day. Everybody frustrated or rolls down and you got to pick up debris and the electricity company out there. And, it's just not a good sight, you know what I'm saying? So that's why it's always best to have some money on collateral. Just as of something happened, I think the blacks just need to build their wealth up a little more. You know, I think we can do it if we start spending too much money on foolishness and TikTok and some other stuff. I think we can branch out and, be better, but it's up to the individual. It just whatever's on their plate. So, I feel bad about New Orleans again.
Okay, well, that's great. I do feel the same way you do, that black people need to do better. And if you live in an area where you have hurricanes or you have disasters, or even if you don't normally have a disaster, I think that everybody needs an emergency fund.
Yeah.
Most people can't afford them, because I know a lot of people who go out there and blow money on buying weeds, getting their nails done, going out to eat all the time, and things like that. And they keep putting that money aside for when, like, something happens and they really need it.
You got your Crayon balls, you got your Royal Crown. Matter of fact, I'm going to get some of that this weekend a little bit, you know what I'm saying? But that's not the answer, for the game. But anyway, like I said, yes, it's about saving. It's about, us doing right. But, sometimes some people just going just not going to have. And as I get older now and I work around the city, I see more white folks not having less and less. They're doing more begging now. They got their cups and every stop sign throughout the city. They doing more begging than anything. So I think
I have a question for you. This is for anybody else could call in also and press 1 to make a comment on this. I mean, when I see a white person begging or with a cup in their hand trying to get money or anything like that, I personally don't feel sorry for them, because how can you mess up white privilege? Because white
honestly, I'm glad you said it. That is so funny. A couple of weeks ago, young white guy, said he about 24, 25. He had his shirt off, his heart, you're in Florida, it's hot as hell. He had that. Big white guy asked him, put him down. I told him, I can't give you no money, because if you broke, you fucked that up on your damn self. Know what I mean?
Right.
And basically, I put the guy in the truck. That's what the white guy was telling the young white guy. I ain't giving you no money, because if you ain't got no money, you ain't got shit. That's because you fucked that up. Basically, what he's saying, you white, you young, ain't no need for you to be out here like you being out here.
I agree.
And 2 years ago, it was an older white guy told a couple of white folks one time, y'all making me damn shame to be out here begging like a damn fool. I'm just ashamed. You know what I'm saying? He said, y'all need to cut it out here begging like y'all ain't got nothing. But it's more, you're doing more begging now than African-Americans. And, some whites don't like it. They just don't like it. Like they said, if you fuck that up, like the white guy told you, if you fuck that up, that's on you, man. I'm not giving you no money. You fuck that up. You had a leg up on the competition.
I agree. That's the reason why I said what I did, because I don't feel sorry for them. I don't care if they're begging or whatever, because they do have privilege. just by being white.
Yeah, yeah. So my thing is, how can we get the African Americans to stop dating, to do better, leave TikTok alone?
Well, that is definitely true, because I was watching a lot of the news footage for the hurricane that just came through the Gulf Coast and Louisiana. And there was, well, were a lot of people who were mentioning, like, well, we just don't have the money to leave. And I saw people wearing expensive clothes and things like that, but they don't have gas money. They didn't have nowhere to stay or no way to get out in time. Trying to wait for the last minute. I don't know if they were trying to come up with some money or what they were trying to do. But as black people, we need to do better.
Yeah, but, you know, we just sitting here, you know, we doing the quick challenges, you know, dumb challenges like that. We doing crazy stuff but not thinking about, you know, being ready for disasters and upping our finance. I mean, a lot of us are, majority of us aren't, you know, but being ready for a disaster is just miserable. You can't, no clean clothes. If you're in the wintertime, then you're cold. If you're in the summertime, then you sweat and wake up sweating. You go to bed sweating and it stink and miserable and muddy, and you ain't got no money for nothing. You got to wait till the Red Cross people come around and wash your clothes and do stuff, and you can get a bottle of water, and I don't know, it's just something else. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we need to concern our with. Okay, now let's talk about this. How many people that went and got the shot?
I know. Some people...
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
And I still know a lot of people who haven't gotten a shot.
Yeah, okay. I figured that.
Do you think that it should be mandatory or that they should force people to get a shot? Because I was on Facebook earlier, and I've seen some people's pages. And some of these people that I personally know, and a lot of opinions, and these are people who are so-called educated. They, matter of fact, each one of these people have at least a master's degree. And they were saying that people should be forced to get the vaccine. So what do you think? Or does anybody else have a thought on that? Want to comment?
I don't want to rush it that far as forcing people to do things. I just think that they should do it at their own will. But, you know, I just think enough of us should get shots. I don't want to go to that where they're forcing you to do stuff that you don't want to do. Even though it'll save a life, I just think that, you know, some more adults need to just pay attention and stop, you know, listen to stuff like, I don't know what's in it. You know, just listen to the scientists and the doctors and just being real open about it. But to each his own, some people still ain't going to get it, you know. But
okay.
I don't want to form the force.
We have another caller, 0574, that has a comment. You stay on. You have a comment, a question?
I don't feel that it should be enforced, but I think everybody should have a right for an opinion as to whether or not they do want it done. As being a person that works in the healthcare field, I have personally seen what people who have came across with the COVID, what they're going through, and the fact of the fact that you have people that are laying there that are dying who do not even get to say a final goodbye to their loved ones, who never get to touch their loved ones. They're laying there by themselves dying.
That's
and it's
true.
All because people do not want to pay attention. No, the mask is not going to 100% protect you, but it does help eliminate the passing of this virus. The shot is not going to 100% protect you, but it does give you an alternative to where if you were to catch it, that there is that 80% possibility of not being placed on a ventilator, not being placed in the hospital. You've got people that are waiting in line to be put on a ventilator or waiting to get into the hospital. They're not even able to treat those that are having severe heart issues because of the fact that we have such an abundance amount of people who have contracted the COVID. And you can't even get people to stop with the large gatherings. They tried to get it to where there's no large gatherings. It's one of the things that you don't know who out here has this. So this is something that is continually being passed and passed and passed. So, I mean, what else can you do? I mean, except to try to get people to take this vaccine. I mean, I take care of my mother and my father. We're all vaccinated. And I would rather be vaccinated and have that possibility of not being put on a ventilator and this vaccine saving my life rather than laying in a hospital bed fighting for my life.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know of anyone who has passed away from COVID?
Yes. I have had plenty of family members that have been non-vaccinated that have passed away. I was waking up every morning to hearing that someone had passed away, and it was due to COVID.
And how did that impact your family, knowing that they weren't vaccinated, and maybe if they were vaccinated, they might be still here?
That's one of the reasons why we all moved forward and decided to get vaccinated. There's nothing in life that is a guarantee, but the fact of knowing that there is this possibility that this could be something that could save me or save one of my loved ones, I was all for it. But like I said, it's to each their own. You know, if nobody, when you force something on somebody, you're going to get more people to turn away when you're forcing it than whenever you're, you know, giving people a choice. But I understand the reason why they're mandating it is because you've got hundreds of people that are piling up in the hospitals. And before this vaccine, stop and think about the truckloads of people's loved ones. They didn't get to say goodbye to none of these people. Some of these people didn't even know that their loved ones had passed. Me personally, I would not want to be in the back of a truck thrown in there because I died from this disease. You know, I was very close to a gentleman that passed away, and it broke my heart that he died from this. So me personally, I think
was he vaccinated, do you know?
No, he was not vaccinated.
Okay.
Who was not vaccinated. All those that I have known and all those of my family that had passed, they were not vaccinated. They had not even came out with the vaccine at that time. And that's the thing. Like, now they came out this vaccine so we don't have to see the hundreds and thousands of people dying now as what we did before. There is something out there that can prevent it. Yes, there has been people that have had side effects. There has been certain side issues, but that's just a couple hundred compared to the hundreds of thousands that have died.
So you do recommend the vaccine, personally?
I personally would recommend it, yes. And that's because I do work in the healthcare field, and I do see it on a daily basis. I do see it, you know. And I know that there's been people that have put their lives on the line before this vaccine even came out. And I know that some of them have survived, have made it through it. But you also have those that didn't survive, that didn't make it through it. You had people that were living in campers and garages that were, you know, away from their family members so that their family members couldn't even catch it. You had doctors that was there 24/7 that had passed away from this, trying to protect our loved ones. So, I mean.
Now, do you, since you work in the hospital and you're in the medical field, are you seeing a lot of people who are quitting their jobs in the medical field because they don't want the shot?
I must say we've had some, yes, yes. And it's the fact that they're being forced to do something. It's not that they're 100% against it, but they feel that they should be given a choice. They don't feel that it's something that somebody should force upon them. But stop and think about it, you know. People in the nursing homes and different places, these people can't get out. So how are these people contracting the virus? It's us that's bringing them in.
All right, and
so,
I agree.
And that's the thing. You got to stop and think about it. If it's something that can help protect us, help protect those that are in these hospitals, in these facilities that are dying, you know, why not do something that do to help prevent it? I'm not saying it's 100% bulletproof that you'll never catch it, but from the people that I know that have had the shot that did wound up, their side effects, they said, was like a sinus. They felt like they had a sinus infection. They didn't
exactly
know that. That would be a lot better than laying in a hospital bed on a respirator fighting for my life.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's their own.
So what kind of symptoms did some of the people that you came across in the hospital, what were they having? What kind of symptoms were they having?
They started out with, like, sore throat. And then it started out sore throat. Then they started saying that, you know, they thought that it was sinus congestion. They had a low-grade temp, and they felt weak. They just felt weak. It went from them having that symptom to, you know, some of them having a hard time breathing. Some of them that said that their doctor told them that their lungs were filling up with fluid. I've had, you know, one that has had, like, the redness in the leg, swelling, which means that's a sign of a blood clot. So, I mean, it has affected other people differently. And those that I have talked to, they're like, you know, I wish I would have gotten a shot, you know. And I hate seeing people be in pain. You know, these are people that have little kids, you know, or they don't have, you know, the father in their life, so they're having to take care of their child plus trying to fight for their own life to get through this COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's hard, especially seeing this working in a hospital and on a daily basis for over a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I also was watching the news and I had saw where in Houston they had closed 3 emergency rooms, and to me that was just unbelievable. I'm like, how can you close an emergency room? And 3 of them had closed 3 different hospitals because they said they can't take any more people. So they just shut them down.
At the rate that is going, I do see a lot of the hospitals, because the amount of patients that they're having to intake is probably going to be, like in our area, you know, a possibility of one main hospital being what we call a COVID hospital,
mm-hmm.
while the other hospital is trying to function, you know, to try to fight to save people that have other issues like heart condition and different things. So, you know, I do see the possibility of something like that happening, because you've got to be able to, you know, take care of those that have other conditions other than just COVID. You know, there's surgeries. People, you know, have to have emergency surgeries. And if the hospital keeps filling up with nothing but COVID patients, you've got to have an alternative place to where you can go to still be able to take care of those that do not have COVID. So, and the holidays are coming.
Like, so you think this Labor Day is going to cause another spike?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you have the holidays and you have large group gatherings, look, the number of cases started rising, what, after 4th of July?
Yes.
Is when we started having our cases rising. So anytime you're having big number of cases or big like holiday, you're going to have family members that are going to be gathering. You don't know where that person's been. You don't know if that person has came in contact with somebody else that might have came in contact it or contact. You know, you could be a carrier and not know that you're a carrier. You know, so anytime there's any type of places where there's big, large groups of gatherings, you are going to see the number rise. Whether it's at concerts, whether it's at fairs, whether it's at family gatherings. I mean, it's just going to happen, because you look at TV every single day. You know, some people think that this is a hoax, even though that they've lost loved ones due to it. But
mm-hmm.
you don't see anything on. You see none of them. I went to Wendy's, and I had a young man, he was in there. Well, the whole Wendy's, everybody in Wendy's. And I pull up at the window and I'm like, I paid for my food and I got to look, and I didn't see a single person in there with a mask on. The gentleman had the audacity to put his finger in his mouth. Didn't think I was going to say anything. So he went to grab my bag and hand the food. I said, excuse me. I said, I want my money back. And he looked at me. I said, I want my money back. I said, you just had your fingers in your mouth. There's not a single person in here that has a mask on. Do you guys not realize this is a pandemic that we're going through? And the boy took off running and got his manager. And she's like, and now she made sure when she came to that window, she had her gloves and mask on. She's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. She's like, let us see. I said, I don't want your free food. I just want my money. I want to be able to go.
Yeah, you know, you really have to be careful these days.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. People don't take it serious, you know. Not until it's them that's laying on that bed that might have to be hooked up to a ventilator, you know. So I don't know.
So if you can foresee, like, having just a type of COVID hospital, do you also maybe think that it would be hard to staff a hospital with just COVID when people know that everybody there has COVID? I mean, because a lot of people have families. You know, they have children. Some people take care of their parents. You know, have grandkids or whatever.
Right. But if you had it to where it was just set up as, like, nothing but COVID that came in and out of there, you know what I'm saying, as a hospital.
Yeah.
Then you had another hospital that had to where they can take care of, like, all the other emergency cases, then it wouldn't be as bad because that way you can get people in and out. You can still perform the surgeries that is needed. You can still take care of whatever the situation might be with that person, whether they're having, you know, kidney failure, you know, heart condition, whatever that the cause may be. But as it stands right now, you've got your ERs that are filling up. So if you've got a patient that's coming in that's COVID positive that needs to be hooked up to a ventilator, or they need to get that person back there rushed through, they're going to take that COVID patient before they're going to take that heart patient.
Why is that?
Because they've got to get that COVID patient out of the way.
Okay,
they've
I
got
heard.
To get them there.
No, I was just saying that I have heard of people who said they were supposed to get surgeries and they were canceled because of the COVID. And they're still waiting.
Currently, right now, unless it's an emergency type surgery or a surgery that does not require you to stay within the facility, you can have that. But if it's a surgery that requires you to be able to stay in the facility right now, you are currently not able to have those done. That's
wow.
due to the fact you do not have beds.
Wow, so COVID patients take precedence over everybody, heart patients, everything.
It's a mess right now.
That's why we got to get a shot. Everybody got to get the shot.
Oh, it's just, you know, it's a matter of everybody waking up and realizing, you know,
True.
You know, we've gone through this before. We've had, what, the H1N1, where you had to get the shot. You've had, what's another one? Lord have mercy, I can't even think. My mind has gone to a blank. The flu shot every year. You know,
I've never
heard that. People were getting the flu shot. You know, there's medication that you take on a daily basis. You read the side effects. Some of it says, you know, could cause death. So are you not going to take that medication because it says it could cause death? No, you're going to take that medication because you trust and believe in your doctor and you believe that he knows what he's doing. You're going to take that medication to help save your life. So there's always an upside and a downside to anything that we do in life. And like I said, if it came, I'm going to put my trust in my doctor and believe that he knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
So what is, this is for both of you, this on. So how do you feel like going to a store, whether it's Walmart, grocery store, and you walk in and people don't have a mask? And you don't know for sure if they had a shot or not.
Does that make
correct.
You feel uncomfortable or anything?
I personally, I mean, I don't agree with the idea that they don't have their masks on, but I, whenever I'm out in public, even though I am, have had my shot, I still wear my N95 mask. I'm going to do what I have to do to protect me, even though they might not, you know, feel the same way. I make sure that whenever I get done, I have sani wipes in my car. I wipe my hands down. I wipe my door handles down. I wipe my steering wheel down. I do what I have to try to protect myself. And I've got to eat. I've got to survive. And I know that there is the thing as where you can call in, place an order, and they can put it in your car and all that. But I like to still go into the store to do my shopping and everything. I'm not going to let COVID take 100% of my life. I'm still going to live.
I'll piggyback off that. I'm like the same way. Even though I don't like it, I can't judge nobody. I just know I have to go in with my mask. I don't know if it's a 95 mask or it's a little cheap dollar mask. But anyway, I got the shots already, so I'm protected. And, you know, I do have sanitation wipes and stuff that I wipe down when I'm at work. You know, in the different trucks and the machines that we run, I always like to wash them down when I get in there because I don't know who had it before because sometimes, you know, you have different workers. You know, they do different trucks. We have a lot of equipment. So, yeah, I may not run the equipment all the time. Well, I may run one, then I may have to run something else. So, you know, I just got sanitation wipes that I just wipe down every equipment that I'm on for my protection, you know.
Right.
So, you know, and that's all I can do. I just got to worry about me. I can't worry about everybody else. I just have to do what I know what I can do, you know, to feel protected and do the best I could.
Right.
So, is it mandatory for the city of Jacksonville to have the COVID shot, or is it just, you know, optional?
No, it's optional. They're the only ones that have it, but it's optional. Like I said, I had a, you know, as a coworker died a couple of months ago from it, and you know, he was one of the ones the same way. You know, he early 50s, death. You don't know what they're going to put in it. You don't know. Okay, well, he died. I have another friend of mine who had, who was sick. And right now you got, and he out right now. He been out real bad with COVID. You know, he just left the hospital. He been in the hospital 4 weeks. He just left Tuesday. They just, you know, released him back home. So he can't come back for 2 weeks or whatever. But he had it real bad, and so, I mean, it's just nothing to play with because he, over the years, he always come to work. He owned up realms because he one of the type of employees that love to come, but COVID beat him down. He was, well, yeah, he was in hospital for almost 2 weeks. They just released him this week, so he got to wait 14 more days, you know, before he can come back to work with a negative test. So, you know, that's... you know, that's one of them things that he didn't believe in either. It's a hoax, and ain't nothing going to happen to him. And, you know, now he down, you know, real bad with it. So, like I said, that's the each his own. You know, he, some people like to joke about it. You don't know what they're putting in you, man. They can be this, that in you, and all that. But a couple of the people that I know did that end up getting COVID and got one of them died, and a couple of them got real sick. So, you know, the same one that was laughing at me, you know, you don't know what you're putting in your mind. It can be this thing, it can be that, and y'all that foolishness.
Right.
So,
we have,
you know,
1 minute.
Okay, to be safe and be smart. I want to be safe and sorry. So, you know what I mean? And I work with these guys. Ain't nothing happened to me.
Well,
so,
thank
like I
you
said,
all.
I just think more after my experience. Thank you.
For your comment. And
thank you for the invite.
And I'm glad you called in, caller, and I hope you call in again. So I want everybody to have a wonderful evening.
You
do
the same.
And be careful. Bye.
Everybody be careful. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everybody. Peace. And get the shot. Bye-bye.